Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
We're joined now by Patrick Honahan, economist, the former governor of the Irish Central Bank, and author of, amongst other titles, Currency, Credit and Crisis, Central Banking in Ireland and Europe. Patrick, you're very welcome and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Vincent.
Now, we're going to talk about central banks and why they may get involved in creating digital currencies of their own, central bank digital currencies. We see the European Central Bank earlier this year said that they would make a decision by next month, by April, as to whether to start planning for a digital euro. The Fed is at the same stage of planning. And of course, the Chinese are ahead of us, the People's Bank of China already piloting a digital currency there. Why, Patrick, are central banks moving forward on a digital currency in their areas like this when effectively and accelerated by COVID, most of us don't use cash anymore anyway? Our payments are already digital.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Of course, they've been thinking about this for some time. Modern technology coming along, payments made in different ways. New payments companies, Revolut and Stripe and the rest of it, all sorts of technological improvements in payments. And I think what has happened is that central banks have a vague sense, not a very precise sense, though I'm not saying that they just have woolly thinking, but it's not a very precise and focused sense that they might lose some of the control they have over the way the economies run, price inflation, if they don't ensure that they are in this technological age of payments. And that is what's prompted them to start thinking about maybe paper currency could be outdated and need to be replaced. But I think something else happened, and this was about a couple of years ago, and that was the arrival of Facebook into this arena. Facebook announced that they were thinking of introducing a stable coin. So it wouldn't be a Bitcoin, like which could price could go up and down and in a wild sort of way. This would be something linked to the major currencies, the dollar and the euro and maybe the Japanese yen and the renminbi of China. And Facebook would allow you conveniently to make any transactions you wanted to domestically, internationally, and why not? And they have this huge customer base. So suddenly the central banks felt, wow, this is something quite different to small startup companies or even small technology companies improving the way that banks deliver payments to you or for you. This is something that might change the whole pattern of payments and money in the economy. So they felt they needed to consider competing with Facebook, providing the services that Facebook promising to provide here, in case this changed the world in ways they didn't want to contemplate.
Now, Facebook announced that system 2 years ago. I think it was called Libra at the time. And at the time, it announced that it had a lot of big tech company backers behind it as well, Patrick. Some of those have pulled out, but some have remained, and it's now called Diem. Why would central banks accelerate their thinking about launching their own digital currency by that Facebook announcement, by that Facebook development? If Facebook basically said, this will have stability, it will be backed up by tangible assets, including the currencies that you already regulate.
Well, we've seen lots of entities over the years and centuries promising to look after your money and to deliver payments, and they don't always deliver on those promises in historical terms. They say, oh, we'll back your savings with a strong reserve of gold or a strong reserve of government bonds or something like that. And then they don't always keep to that. They veer away from that. So we've seen a lot of collapses in the past, and central banks don't want to see a situation where a huge entity like Facebook soaks up this entire activity and then gradually becomes less reliable and allows the system to collapse. But that's not the only reason public authorities in general might be a bit nervous about Facebook or similar entities becoming dominant in this kind of activity. Already they have at their disposal huge amounts of information about the preferences, the purchasing habits of their customers, which their customers have given to them. sometimes unknowingly, sometimes knowingly, to build on top of that the further information advantages and the potential for linking in the payments history of customers to all of the advertising mechanisms that Facebook have, might give Facebook or any other companies of that scale a dominance in the economy and society that might not be being used in the public interest. And we've seen some parallels, not just Facebook. We've seen some parallels to this in China, where very large tech companies have moved increasingly into the payments area. The most largest and most well-known of them is the company called Alibaba. They have a financial subsidiary called Ant Financial, which does all this payment stuff and feeds the information into the Alibaba system. And the Chinese authorities have the same kind of concerns there. And they have in recent months sort of blown the whistle on Alibaba and said, no, look, you're behaving in ways that we need to regulate you more. We need to be thinking of you more like the way we think about banks. Restrict what you can do, look carefully at what you can do, and we're not going to allow you to just take over the world, so to speak, take over China
to
begin with.
So you think the People's Bank of China, the authorities in China's move against Jack Ma, the billionaire founder of Alibaba and Ant, you think their move against him last autumn wasn't necessarily simply a reflection of an autocratic government moving against a billionaire that they might have perceived getting a bit too big for his boots and a bit too critical of the regulators? It might actually presage some of the concerns that Western central banks have as well about who controls digital currencies.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, newspapers and commentators have enjoyed talking about the way in which Jack Ma, who is the founder and big chief bottle washer of Alibaba and financial, he was critical of Chinese government and Chinese financial regulators. And it was after that that they started to move to restrict the activities of that firm. But I think that it isn't just a question of Jack Ma versus top Chinese rulers. It's a question of the underlying forces in society, and the statements of Jack Ma and the response were just an epiphenomenon of something deeper.
Now, that concern, perhaps on the part of central banks that you referenced, that in addition to effectively a major private entity perhaps having control of large elements of the global payment system, but also more access even to customer data, couldn't that also be a concern of many people that central banks under a new digital currency, particularly if they use blockchain as the platform by which that digital currency would operate, a distributed ledger where every transaction would effectively be recorded, that central banks would have huge amount of information about our private transactions as well in a way that they can't have with the anonymity of cash?
Well, that's certainly something that concerns some people who want to emphasize the privacy and your ability just when you've got a cash, paper cash, you spend the money, but nobody knows what you spent it on. Nobody knows how much you've spent and so forth. And it's inevitable, I think, that the technical ability in any kind of digital currency that would come to provide the same sort of services that paper cash does, it's inevitable that that kind of information would somehow become accessible to central banks. Even if they didn't want to use it, they would have the capacity to use it. And so that might be something they might have to make a decision about. How much information are we going to accumulate? What kind of Chinese or other denomination walls are we going to establish between what the technology acquires and stores in terms of finding out what people have spent and how much will be transferred into the rest of the central bank? So that's something that is certainly open for discussion. It's not the intention of the central bank to become a big tech company itself, but even if they don't use blockchain or distributed ledger technologies, and there's no guarantee that they would, they don't need to do that to provide a digital currency, they would have acquired the technical ability to get more information.
Let's assume that the European Central Bank does decide, you know, pretty soon to go ahead and plan for a digital currency of its own, a digital euro in effect, and the Fed in the United States makes the same decision. How do you think this will actually look in 4 or 5 years' time when it probably will take that amount of time to launch one, Patrick? How will this look? I mean, will we as individual people and individual businesses say, be able to hold deposits in this digital currency and thereby effectively, you know, reduce the deposit taking capacity of the commercial banks?
Yes, well, we can see to some extent how this could work if we look at the Bahamas, which is a tiny country, but it has actually introduced its own digital currency. What I think you will see is it will be a little bit like having an account on your phone. That's probably the easiest comparison. You probably won't really notice the difference between being a central bank digital currency or your access to your current account. It would be a modern payment system using phones or cards, but it would more likely be phones, and in much the same way as many of us are already doing. The difference would be that it would be an obligation of the central bank and not of some commercial bank that might be a fly-by-night operator. So they'll be guaranteed by the central bank. And on behind that, of course, we're more interested in the retail end of this, the end that's visible to the customer. But what is being constructed even now are stronger, quicker, cheaper, more effective wholesale links, international and domestic, continually being improved, and that being provided by the central bank. Central bank underpins the wholesale payment system that makes sure that when you make a payment, it's going to somebody else who has a bank, a different bank account, a different country. That's going through a lot of steps. These steps at the moment are not very efficient. They should be more efficient. So the services could be quicker and cheaper. And that applies especially to international services. If you're in the unfortunate position of having to send money to some relative that lives in some country in Latin America, Africa, you'll find that you're paying a lot, the money doesn't get there very fast, and it's a hassle. The prospect is that with whether it's the central bank digital currency or with something outsourced by central banks, these transactions could be made more cheaply and faster.
Our guest here on News Talk is Patrick Honohan, former governor of the Irish Central Bank, and we're talking to him about the prospect of the major central banks around the world establishing their own digital currencies. Assuming that we would all be able to keep a certain amount of our wealth, if that's what we may call it, Patrick, in the form of a new digital euro controlled by the central bank, wouldn't that mean automatically we were holding fewer deposits in the commercial banks? We might even not have our salaries paid into a commercial bank anymore, but straight into this central bank digital currency. That would mean banks would have smaller deposits and thereby less capacity to lend into the economy. So a negative possible impact on the functioning of commercial banks.
It's not an irrelevant point, but this is a circular system. If people move their money from a commercial bank account into a central bank account, the commercial bank can also borrow money from the central bank because the central bank has now acquired resources, loanable funds that it can lend out to the bank. So it doesn't shrink the whole system. It just transfers it to the players in different ways. I don't imagine that a huge amount of one's savings or accumulated wealth, if any, would go into this. After all, central bank digital currency, it is a payments mechanism. It wouldn't be a high yielding, well, nobody gets a high yielding deposit account these days, but in more normal times, one was used to there being interest rates, even if only 1 or 2% on savings accounts. This would be just for your transactions balances, and you wouldn't have any reason or need to be placing more than that with the central bank's digital currency. So I think that could be exaggerated. Where people have focused a little bit on remembering the crisis of 2008 and 2009, and people start to panic and think that their banks didn't trust their banks anymore, you could have a sudden move of deposits. People would just say, oops, see a rumor about the first wild bank, so yeah. I'm going to move my money out of that into the central bank, and that bank then would have to scramble to the central bank and say, look, people have lost confidence in us, please lend us the money so that we can continue to service the borrowing needs of our customers. These are all situations that can be managed and have been managed in crises in the past, so I'm not sure that I worry too much about that particular scenario.
You referenced there that one of the advantages of a digital, a central bank digital currency might be lower cost and simplification and transparency of international payments, whether between individuals or between businesses indeed. Isn't it likely, though, that a lot of poorer countries who have pretty volatile currencies for obvious reasons, that the citizens of those countries effectively, unless they're barred from doing so, would like to have a share of a digital euro or a digital dollar, which will give a little bit more stability to whatever wealth they have?
No, this is a potentially very serious problem. Already you get a lot of countries who their monetary affairs haven't been managed very well, and people who have wealth in those countries, either they hold it offshore or even domestically, they hold dollars or they hold dollar bank accounts or euro bank accounts because they don't trust the likely future development of the currency. And even now we're seeing several countries in the last few years where the currencies collapsed, Turkey, Argentina. And these are the sort of countries that people like to hold other currencies. And if a central bank digital currency issued by, for example, the European Central Bank was available, well, that looks like a much more attractive proposition if you don't trust the currency of the country that you're living in. So to combat that fear that introduction of a central bank currency by major, well-run and incredible central banks might undermine the monetary policies of smaller countries, some people have suggested that, well, maybe there should be a ceiling on the amount of these currencies that you should hold, or maybe non-residents shouldn't be able to hold them at all, that tourists could have a few hundred euros or a few thousand euros if you're a tourist, but that expires after 3 months after you leave. All sorts of restrictions to make it just a purely domestic idea. So that idea has been floating around. It actually sounds a little bit as if that might start that way, but gradually these ceilings would be expanded or the limitations would be got around. So I think that is a serious threat for small countries. On the other hand, if you had a well-run monetary system in a small country, you'd have no worries about that. So run your monetary system well.
We've been talking, Patrick, about the form of money and the way we use money and the nature of money is changing and accelerated by COVID-19 and now it may accelerate again with the establishment of digital currencies by the major central banks of the world. I'm interested, though, in your view as a former central banker relatively recently about the quantum of money. And we've seen how major Western economies in particular, the central banks have been pouring new money effectively into those economies, quantitative easing by buying up bonds for many years to stimulate the economies of those countries. But we've seen that really become gigantic with COVID-19, understandably, to try and help businesses and help economies survive that. Do you worry with the resurfacing concerns about inflation down the line and possibly interest rates rising within the next 2 or 3 years as to how all this monetary expansion is going to be paid for?
Yeah, I think that looking at this from the quantity of money point of view is not the most helpful way. And I think it can lead you into a lot of logical traps. Of course, what's happened in central banking right across the major economies, they've all reacted in similar ways to keep borrowing costs low, keep borrowing costs, especially for government, low, and also for companies low, because this is the only way to make sure that governments will be able to freely spend as much as is needed to maintain income support as much as possible, to keep afloat companies that do have long-term viable business models but are getting into terrible stressed positions now because of this protracted COVID. So I think the interest rates, the maintenance of low interest rates and how long that can be maintained and how heavily indebted governments will become even at low interest rates, because they're borrowing at long term, but they're not borrowing forever. So they're borrowing sort of 2 years and 5 years and even 10 years, but it's not forever. So maintaining low interest rates for a long period of time to come, and the management of the economies when the recovery comes, and when all the built-up savings that people who haven't been affected financially by this COVID but haven't been able to spend their money, they start to spend their money. Could this lead to inflation? If it leads to inflation, people don't like inflation. Central banks are told not to allow inflation. So central banks might have to, interest rates might have to come up at some point. But I think this is a very remote at this stage. And although, yes, this is an unusual situation, indebtedness coming out of this crisis will be very high, there are a number of longer term factors which make equilibrium interest rates much lower than they used to be. So I'm not expecting a very strong bounce back in interest rates. And I'm not alone in this. And if you look at the numbers, particularly in Europe, I think the prospect of a very long period of very low interest rates is something that that's what we should be basing our planning on.
So you don't worry about a cliff edge day of reckoning sometime in the mid 2020s.
No, I don't think it'll be a cliff edge, but I think what we'll discover is a number of things would have changed as we come out of it. There will be political pressures to look at government spending in a different way, to look at the desirability of redistributional spending, to look at the desirability of major government spending on climate change. This pandemic is, if it's not caused by abuse of the environment, that may not be its cause, but it's a wake-up call for people who have not realized how climate change and abuse of the environment can cause problems of extreme severity. So governments would be encouraged, pressed by their electorates to spend more money on climate change mitigation and protection against climate change. So I think there will be a lot of pressure for continued spending by governments, and that will mean inevitably higher taxation and different types of taxation in the future. And how that's all managed over the next few years will determine prosperity in the rich countries. Unfortunately, for poorly managed macroeconomies, and I can point again to the several countries that have got into trouble, even in the middle of this very low interest rate environment. Turkey is a country that we could talk about at some length in the last few weeks, their attempts to stabilize their macroeconomy. They can't get these low interest rates because they haven't managed their affairs very well. So long-term management of monetary and fiscal affairs would be vital to ensure that things don't hit rocky territory.
Finally, Patrick, you mentioned there that there will be pressure on governments to invest in the new green economy and new infrastructure and all of that. In richer economies, will that necessarily lead to significantly higher taxation, or do you ascribe any validity to the fact that, you know, if the peak of the next interest rate cycle remains relatively low, maybe 2-4%, that the large central banks could effectively continue to print money, that they effectively control the money system and it doesn't really matter?
I think that there is a lot more leeway than people often supposed. Coming out of the last recession, we found ourselves in Ireland in a situation where nobody would lend to us because they were worried that they would never get paid back. And that can happen in some countries. But other countries, particularly our neighbor, United Kingdom and the United States, because of their own political split between Republicans and Democrats, they went to balance the fiscal books long way before it was necessary. And they could have managed their affairs with a greater degree of fiscal expansiveness. That greater degree of fiscal expansiveness is available now, but it's not unlimited. It doesn't go on forever. The economy is a limited entity. You can run it hot for a while, but you can't produce something out of nothing. So there is, restraint is necessary. You need to say, okay, we need to spend on this, that, and the other thing, but there are costs. The deadlines and the obstacles are not as near as they seemed to many people to be, but they eventually do come to limit what you can do.
Appreciate your insights into the changing form and nature and quantum of money, both sloshing around in our pockets and wallets, digitally or in paper form, and of course in national economies. But we'll leave it there. That's Patrick Honohan, economist and former governor of the Irish Central Bank and author of Currency, Credit and Crisis, Central Banking in Ireland and Europe. Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Always nice talking to you, Vincent.
Taking Stock on Newstalk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.